Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, take a series from the Astros. Got another tough one coming up. Brewers. Ryan, where would you like to start?
You know, I think I'd like to start with that series against Houston. Even as the Padres continued to win and made a case for them being buyers at the trade deadline, I still had a little bit of a doubt. Like, well, okay, let's see what happens when they play good teams. And they've gone now the last, seven games against teams that are either contending or locked into winning their division in the Diamondbacks and the Astros. And they've gone a combined 4-3, including taking 2 of 3 against Houston. I think given who Houston has in their lineup and the talent there, I think that this counts as a definite victory over the weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially you can't help but scoreboard watch. They can't help but to some extent scoreboard watch. So I'm just telling you, they do a much better job than the rest of us of just focusing about what's on the field. Nonetheless, like they are locked in a dogfight and they needed to win these games. That's where they put themselves. The same thing coming up here. And so I agree with you. Absolutely. Also, to me, far and away, that Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis Jr. are hitting home runs, are getting big hits, is the absolute biggest, most positive thing that is happening with the Padres right now. Now, you need to get those two new starters going, but Tatis and Merrill are just so important.
Right. Jackson Merrill leads the big leagues in OPS over a certain period of time, correct? And Tatis is in the, 14th? Something along those lines.
Just depends on what day you go from.
Right, sure.
Yes, they are among the leaders since around the All-Star break. Like Merrill started 0-for-8 after the break. Right. But since that Sunday when he got the two home runs and the, was it 4 hits or 5 hits? But since then he leads the OPS or he leads the MLB in OPS since July 19th. You go back one day before that. Remember Tatis homered on both the 18th and the 19th in Kansas City. He has a 1.004 OPS. So it's just whatever. Bottom line, these two guys essentially since the All-Star break have been everything the Padres need them to be. I like the way I put it today is it can't be this way all the time, but it really should be this way more of the time. That we are in August and it's the first time we're talking about these two guys being hot together is why they're in a battle like they are.
Right. And to me, this is the hottest I've seen Jackson Merrill in the last probably two full years after the All-Star break in 2024. When he's going right, to me, it looks effortless, right? He's hitting the ball hard. He's finding gaps. He's using his legs. And then he's running into home runs. The power, to me, is the thing that seems to be different here lately, especially. Any reason for that or just making better contact, having a better approach?
There. He made a mechanical change that allowed him to be more ready. When he's more ready, that goes to everything. Like Jackson Merrill will tell you, none of it was up here with the confidence and the all that. Yeah, because when you're not feeling right, mechanically, you're not feeling right up here. Now, so like, it's just funny because you are so right. Like there's a way, it's even more effortless than Tatis. Now, Merrill doesn't have that insane athleticism that Tatis has. But it's close, and it's just that swing, man. And it's like when he is right mechanically, then he's right up there like, I can hit anything. Mm-hmm. And he does.
Yep. I think his defense always looks so effortless, and it's because he is so athletic and is able to get there. And again, still a young guy. It's such a treat to watch, I think, when the offensive side looks, again, like he's locked in, like it's effortless. And with him and Fernando Tatis, if both of them can stay somewhere between where they were before and where they've been for the last 3 weeks, now this looks like a playoff team, right? Now this looks like a team that maybe other teams might be a little afraid of because they're getting that production there from the top of their order.
Now, unfortunately, right? So that's you're right. And then, like, either at the end of September, it'll be like, all right, look, they did it. And then we'll, you know, talk about the series after that. But, like, or it'll be, oh, yeah, they were a dangerous team, you know, like the end of the year. But they screwed up in the beginning. We've heard that story before. So, yes, all you can do right now is control now. And this team is playing like a playoff team. I really you know, reluctant to be like, told you so, because they haven't done anything.
Right.
Also makes me sound like a douchebag. Anyway, the idea that they weren't a playoff team was weird to me because we didn't know what they were going to do with the trade deadline. And we didn't know whether these guys were going to stink all year. Like, they probably weren't going to. I don't know what faith we could have had they were going to get better. It went on for half the season, but or more than half the season. But, like, yeah, like, this isn't all that surprising that they went out, they did something to the trade deadline, addressed need, big-time need, and their guys started to play right before the trade deadline. This is rounding into shape. We'll have to see. They got to, A, keep it up. This one thing, Fernando Tatis Jr., in every, like, time that he talks about how well they're doing, he throws in, and we got to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. And speaking of Fernando Tatis Jr., I mean, we're starting to see some of those sort of nuclear bomb moments that Fernando Tatis became so famous for, again, in his first few years with the Padres. Not just hitting home runs, crushing home runs. He hit one at Chase Field that still hasn't landed. He's parked two over the weekend, both of which were just crushed. This is what it looks like when he's going good. He's not only hitting balls, he's murdering them, right?
Yeah, it's weird he's doing it without the ringworm for all the people that you know, have talked about that, which is, look, it's a valid thing. You commit the crime, you do the time, and also the numbers were down. But, like, he hit really well in 24. I contend he'd have been another, got his third top five MVP finish in 24 if he hadn't been hurt and missed, you know, a third of the season and played on one leg for the rest of it. But yes, this is different. This is different. And not only nuclear, but, like, dramatic. Obviously, yeah. Last night, taking him from down one to up two with the three-run bomb to the second balcony, the Western Metal Building. But that one on Friday, where he was ticked off that the Ronel Blanco was, like, quick pitching him. He stepped out for two pitches and then crushes the ball, watches it as long as he's watched the ball in a long time. 32.54 seconds around the bases, his longest home run trot ever. Like, that dude can pimp like nobody. Like, and the sweet bat toss is the one where you just bat behind you. Like, not even a bat. It's not even a bat flip. It's just like that dude. Those are the moments, but you got to play to have those moments. You got to be that guy. And it feels like Fernando's that guy again.
Yeah. And it, I think it's been so refreshing to see him. And I don't want to read too much into what I see on television, but Kevin, you interact with him every day. When he has those sort of nuclear bomb moments, when he hits those home runs, and all of a sudden he's doing the stutter step around third again, and he's got a different handshake with every guy in the clubhouse and everything else, it seems to me like he is enjoying himself a hell of a lot more than he did from about March till about June.
Yes, I absolutely want to say that 100% agree. Always want to say he did much better job this year than in previous years when struggling. He really, really did. That's not to say, I mean, because you're right. Yeah, that he didn't get frustrated. Of course he did. Also about Jackson Merrill. Jackson Merrill will tell you he really is proud of himself. And that can be true. He's really proud of himself for how he didn't get he fought to not be frustrated and not show his frustration. And that can be true, as well as other people felt his frustration and he didn't have the same energy as when he's going well. Those both can be true because, you know, Jackson Merrill only knows it could have been a lot worse. Like, the way that he was thinking, he could have just been a real little baby. What teammates, everybody talks about is the difference when Jackson Merrill is going, and the same goes for Fernando, the energy that both of these young, dynamic, exciting, and excitable players bring to the Padres. It's as much as what you said about Fernando feeling it, the rest of the team feels it.
Right. You know who could pimp a home run pretty good? Austin Hayes. You see that last night? When we're telling the story of the season, maybe this is a paragraph, maybe this is a chapter. Austin Hayes gets released by the White Sox last week in the midst of a pennant race. White Sox acquire Brenton Doyle from the Rockies, decide they don't need any more Austin Hayes. Release him. The Padres announced yesterday, Kevin, what was it, noon, that they had signed Austin Hayes. He was in the clubhouse by what, 2?
Well, he was in the clubhouse probably by 11 before any of us heard about it. Right, okay. Yes.
But my point is, right, They announced before lunch that they've signed Austin Hayes. And right around dinner time, Austin Hayes is hitting a ball off the facade of the Western Metal Supply Company building. I know that it's unfair to expect that level of injection of talent and big moments. But this is a guy who might be able to help them down the stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. He could give you one or two more moments like that. Yeah. Also, you know, get on base as a pinch hitter every once in a while, play a little outfield. You know, this is a guy who has this year, and it's not very much. That's the weird thing about this year is the White Sox, he was hurt, both calves. Mm-hmm. I loved the way he put it. They got basically what he said is like, they got there without me. Like they didn't need me anymore. Like, you know, like it wasn't that he stunk. It was that he was hurt. He wasn't there and they didn't know that he would be there. Right. And so they went and got somebody else. And so he was let go. Like this wasn't Luis Renjifo, who by the way is hitting 400 or whatever it is. He stunk for the Brewers. Like Austin Hayes just didn't get a chance with the White Sox because he was hurt and they moved on. And like, this is a decent player. I don't know how you could possibly expect at a chart in today's newsletter. Like it's preposterous what the Padres have gotten from the scrap heap this year. It's arguably better than the Donovan Solano, David Peralta year. Though those guys were big, those guys were huge, but like it's kind of silly to expect that he would be that guy. I mean, who could be as good as Samad Taylor? You know, I've been saying that for years. This is a solid pickup by a contending team down the stretch. Because you need a piece like that.
Right. And he will essentially, I mean, his role here is going to be essentially what Renjifo was doing against lefties, right? Is he'll play left field against lefties? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think he'll get some starts and he'll be that guy off the bench too. Right. Because Renjifo has also, you know, continued to earn that time out there, right? But Gavin Sheets isn't playing in the field anymore because of the foot injury. So yes, that both. I think that I don't know when I haven't checked the Brewer starters. You can tell me. I would imagine he gets a shot against a left-handed starter this week, but he's also this guy that they haven't had off the bench. It's who they hoped Chase Bowen would be, but no, Chase Bowen. I'm sorry. That was so disrespectful. Chase Bowen has earned his way to the big leagues. He just hasn't been very good at the plate.
But Chase Bowen, keep in mind, hit a ball off the facade of the Western Metal Supply Company building 7 days ago, right? I mean, it's hadn't done much else. I was surprised to see that he was still on the roster with this move. To me, I was surprised. To me, this says Chase Bowen's a pinch runner and very little else the rest of the way.
Oh, I think it is, but that's another thing that a team needs is at this point, right? Like you say, okay, what do we need? What might be the difference in one game? And one game could be the difference in out of the playoffs or in it. And so Jace Bowen could be that guy. Gage Workman not getting a lot of work. You know, they've got a bunch of left-handed bats. Like, let him go down and play. He could be backup anytime.
Right, right. We'll always have the bases clearing triple in Phoenix, Gage Workman.
Yes, I want to remind people and remind myself. Jace Bowen could do some incredible work this offseason, come in next year, cut down on that chase rate, and be what they hoped he would be next year. Just because a guy started out looking lost doesn't mean he always will be.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
That's a reminder to Kevin, as well as everybody else.
Right, 100%. And he's young, but you're right. He swings sometimes against breaking pitches like I would if I was in that situation. He had an at bat in Phoenix. I think I may have texted you. He was completely overwhelmed. And you don't see big leaguers overwhelmed by Diamondbacks middle relief pitching very often.
2 months in. Two months in. Like, I mean, it's just again and again and again. And look, we're coming down on Jace Bowen, and it's like Jace Bowen's not any sort of problem with this team, other than the fact that Jace Bowen has to be on this team because they don't have bats.
Right, right. And to his credit, he has an extra gear. He has an extra gear. He could be the guy whose foot touches home to win a playoff game because he is that fast and that athletic. And that's what they see in him. Hey, let's get into the starting pitching real quick. You know, to me, if there's a bright side of last week too, the Padres lost three games. Two of them were started by their new starting pitchers, right? They were able to overcome former Cy Young Award winner Robbie Ray and former number one pick Casey Mize. And both of those guys pitched this week. So starting with tonight in this series, Padres Brewers, 6:40 p.m. Logan Henderson, 6-1 with a 2.7 ERA versus Casey Mize, 4-7 with a 3.4 ERA. Logan Henderson's really good, Kevin. Tough right-hander. What's Mize working on?
The Brewers would have, not to turn this into a little sidebar, they might have done well to go out and get Scooble. But I don't like to spend other people's money, but that was a franchise-altering opportunity for them. A CC Sabathia moment for them that could have gone even further. And because, like, they are a really, really good team and a fun team to watch, and they play baseball. All the people that email me about the Padres not hustling, well, watch the Brewers. You'll be thrilled. this is a really good team and really good pitching.
Yep. What's Casey Mize have to improve here to get off the mat after that first career
worst
start?
Good pitches and leave fewer pitches up. He just, wasn't very good. Hadn't pitched in 11 days. I'm not making excuses, but like this happens quite a bit actually when, a new guy joins a team and, the routine has been disrupted and he really wants to do well. I think you saw little tiny flashes. They had to be little tiny because he gave up, it was his worst outing, but little tiny flashes where you go, hey, Casey Mize really knows how to pitch. And so obviously he'll be motivated. They seem to be very optimistic that this was a one-off in terms of it was rough, that first start after that whirlwind to be traded and join a new team.
Yep. Tomorrow night, Kyle Harrison, 9-2 with a 2.84 ERA. Remember him? He was thought to be a bust with the Giants. This guy is dealing for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's going up against Walker Buehler, 6-5, 5.7 ERA, has an 8.31 ERA in 7 starts since the beginning of July, and yet every time he pitches, the Padres win for some reason.
It's pretty remarkable. It's funny how that for one season at a time, right? Like a pitcher gets a bunch of support, and it's a lot of times for Walker, it's been after he leaves the game, and he just Walker's not losing today. But yeah, that man, you're not facing Mizorowski, and yet you are facing tough pitchers. Like this is tough.
Yep, the first two pitchers for the Brewers in this series have ERAs that start with the number 2. It's pretty impressive. And then we get to Wednesday afternoon. They did make a big trade deadline acquisition for a starting pitcher, but it's Dustin May. Dustin May, 6-7, 4.3 ERA. He's going up against Robbie Ray, 10-7 with a 3.24 ERA, a battle of two guys with 3 letters in their last names, May versus Ray. Interesting.
It's funny that you had the opportunity to point out 2 similarities they have, and I'm thinking how your brain works. You pointed out not that they rhymed, but that there's 3 letters in there. Rain Man. Okay.
You don't want to be around me when Wheel of Fortune's on, Kevin. Dustin May, 6-7. You know what? Came over from the Cardinals in an offseason or in a trade deadline trade along with JoJo Romero. Really good reliever, Romero. Is good a league average starter. He allowed 3 runs to the Padres over 6 innings in a loss in St. Louis to the Padres. Robbie Ray, again, hoping to get up.
That was a loss to the Padres in San Diego. In St. Louis, Dustin May shut out the Padres for 9 innings on 1 hit.
That's right. Oh, man. Robbie Ray struggled in his first start against the Padres or against the first start with the Padres. Kevin, same question on him. I mean, what's going to unlock Robbie Ray here? Is it just more low strikes?
He was not very good. Now, he got through 5 innings because he's a pro, but he was kind of spraying the ball all over the place. But here's the thing about Robbie Ray. And that's my second time watching him. And I thought the 2 starts were very similar. One team just capitalized on it. The other team didn't. The Padres walked away from that game. And all during it, you're going, wait, this is like the epitome of effectively wild. The Padres are getting guys on base. They're just not, capitalizing. And Robbie Ray came into his start with the Padres, his first start with 140 batting average and 200 on base percentage with runners on base. Like with men on, he's been fantastic. But the guy walks a lot of people, gives up a fair amount of hits, and gets away with it. And he didn't that night.
Right. You're right. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode. Today is no different. Let's talk about Joe Musgrove. One of the most interesting things I read in your notebook or Padres newsletter was a quote from Craig Stammen saying, just watching him pitch, is a breath of fresh air. It's a sight for sore eyes, I believe is what he said. I mean, they were piping his AAA rehab start into Stammen's office and into the clubhouse so people can watch. How close is Joe Musgrove here to being able to contribute? And what will it mean in that clubhouse to have him there day in and day out now and contributing?
I think it was really cool to see that Joe. Now, he was facing AAA hitters. I'm not even sure who he was facing. But like that Joe, just to see that motion, right? Like I thought that before anybody said it, like, whoa, that's really cool. And then he was commanding. And so I think I was really positive because this could be a bumpy comeback. I mean, because generally they are after you haven't pitched in more than a year. But like, if anyone can do it, I'm just telling you, man, Joe Musgrove is going to find a way. And it does mean a lot because he has maintained a presence with the team and he can be a really good guy to pitch for them. And that can be as a starter. That could be as a guy in the postseason that four innings at the end of a game, or in the middle of a game or something, you know. I think it has the potential, and this is a somewhat silly, weird thing to say, but like I think it has the potential to be bigger than Nick Pivetta coming back. Mm-hmm. Now, Nick Pivetta hasn't been off as long. Nick Pivetta could come back and be better than Joe. I don't know that. I'm just saying, like, Joe's a gamer. Not that Nick isn't. There's just something about Joe.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, too, the Padres having proven here in the last couple months that they can piece it together, that you don't need your starting pitchers to necessarily go six. Maybe Joe Musgrove is an opener. Maybe Joe Musgrove is the bulk guy in a big game. To me, this is probably too Pollyanna-ish here. I think he is such a part of who they are that there's going to be a jolt that may extend beyond the four ERA he'll probably put up when he comes back. You know,
he's a force of personality. I try to really look at it soberly because obviously he's very good to the media, but he cares so much and he's just so unafraid and he cares about his teammates. And it's just, he's a force.
Yep, absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres Brewers 3-game series tonight, tomorrow, and then Wednesday afternoon. And then Padres head east after that. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.